Welcome, everybody, to the Feld Podcast. I am your host, Sam Iscovel. Thank y'all for tuning in. Thank y'all for all the support, everyone who's watching and the comments. It really, I don't know what the goals are at this moment for the Feld Podcast. Things are kind of clicking from all angles. It's kind of an exciting time behind the scenes. And so with every episode, you should start to see new things, better guests, better interviews, because we're always trying to level up. Whatever the mistakes we made on the last one, I'm always making adjustments and then getting better for the show that you're watching now. And as you know, we're recording in Pod Space 3108. It's located here in Fort Worth, Texas. So if you're watching outside of the area, I hope you're enjoying the setup. It's been a long time in the making, and we're happy that we are using this setup for this interview today. We have had some amazing guests. My roster is so long. I've talked to so many people. Sometimes I ask myself, how can someone have so many questions to ask? And I think that that's a direct correlation to my curiosity about how people live, how people's journeys have shaped them. And that's what the Feld Podcast is becoming. It's becoming a platform where people get to share their stories. And I'm privileged enough to sit on this side and be able to conversate with my guest. And every guest, they leave something here for all of us to learn from. So I'm very thankful for everyone that's come on up to now. And I've had someone else who's been on more than once, but he's a fellow podcaster, and we kind of go back and forth. But today we have a very special guest. He's a good friend of mine. It's a second time here, and since the first time he came, a lot has happened, a lot in life, a lot in business, and so I can't wait to see what he has to share with us today. So let me introduce our next guest, Rick Folletti. I almost want to say it like Rick Folletti.
You know, hey, you got to throw in that Rocky Balboa accent. It's a Rick Folletti. No, yeah.
How you doing?
I'm doing good. Excited to be here. Like you said, a lot has happened since the last time. How long has it been since I was on? It's been a couple years now.
I believe
it?
So.
Yeah.
Easy, I think. It almost, time goes by so fast. People have always shared that idea of why does time go faster when you get older? I just think is it's more valuable and you use up more of it. And so how do you define the pace of time right now in your daily life? Do you feel like it's going fast? Do you feel like it's slowing slow?
Oh no, I mean it's lightning speed. You know, I've got two kids at home, a 9-year-old and 2-year-old. You know baby Johnny real well. He's not much of a baby anymore.
No.
You know, life goes really fast, especially, you know, when we talk about, you know, the stage of life when you have young kids and your career and you're trying to make something of yourself, or you're trying to, as you mentioned a second ago, level up to that next level. We get in these routines, you know, get up, get ready for work, go to school, come home, make dinner, go to bed. And that's really life, right? While the kids are at school, we're working, and we really only get maybe a few hours a day with our family.
Yeah.
And that's why, you know, I'm so passionate about work-life balance is because when we think about how little time we actually get with our families.
Mm. Well, that's so crazy that you say that, like work-life balance. And there's a time in a lot of people's lives where they're just like, just go all in. Like, here's what I'm chasing. The objective is making money. And so you go full speed and you sacrifice everything. And that's a majority of people. But it seems like culture is waking up to this new idea. There's this four-day week that's a lot of people are talking about. And even though they're saying that because they want to work less, in essence, it's like, okay, what are you going to do with the fifth day? Like, if they're going to work you less, then what are you going to do with you after? Because we're so used to having work as an excuse for our time and sacrifice, and it's hardly ever the other way around. Now, when you get older and things go well, then you might have more time on your hands. But when you're young, what do you do? Like, it's almost like that's what you got to do nowadays, because it's so tough out here. if you don't go hard, you're not going to be able to achieve your goals.
Yeah.
And that's a hard thing to face. So whenever you say life and work balance, what do you mean? And what are some of, I guess, what are some of the negative things that, that maybe you had to face to make you get that, to help you get that clarity?
That's a great question. I was actually talking to my wife about this morning. So, and let me preface this with, I'm not saying we should all go back to the 1950s where all the women stay home and cook dinner and, you know, the men go to work. But when you think about a home where both the parents are working full time, and you're trying to maintain a healthy diet, right? You're trying to eat the right things, make sure that you make good food choices, that you're, you know, you're taking your supplements, you're getting plenty of rest, you're making sure that, you know, that you have that sleep to be able to revitalize your body. So the challenges that I've faced is just on a daily basis, having enough time to be able to plan accordingly for the family, whether it be who's going to cook dinner, who's going to get the kids to school, you know, the logistics of life get very challenging when you own a business. My wife and I are both business owners, and so it does create another level of challenge to be able to balance all that. And, you know, for me, the most important thing in my life is my family and the impact that I'll leave on the world. And that's why you and I are such good friends, because we shared that bond in that matter.
Balancing time, I don't know. I feel like a lot of people struggle with it because no one's ever told them how. Like, it's usually just family and life. Like, that's like the simpler way of putting it. Mm-hmm. But now we're starting to insert different elements into what is a healthy life. And that does include, like, dieting. That includes fitness and so many other things. So you're focusing a lot, like, on mental health, on focus, on being healthy all the way around. Why would we add more things? Like, it's already hard enough.
Right.
And I'm saying this for motivation. Because I feel like I don't want my friends and family and the people that are watching to be happy with just having to choose between home and work. Because in there, you're neglecting yourself. There's hobbies, there's mental health, there's interactions with friends that share in the same interests. That's good for a person. But how do you not judge yourself? You know, even though they're important, the other two are priority. How do we get ourselves there so we don't feel bad? I'm not playing frisbee golf all day.
And disc golf is one of my passions.
Is it disc golf or frisbee?
Frisbee golf, disc golf. I'll say disc golf. You can frolf, you can disc golf, you can do whatever you want. You know, that's the age-old question is how do you, you know, there's only 24 hours in the day.
Yeah.
And if you're getting enough sleep, 7 to 8 of those hours are spent in the bed asleep. Yeah. So you only have, you know, 15, 16 hours a day to figure out what to do with your time. Mm-hmm. And most people are going to work for about 8 to 10 hours a day. So that takes out another 8 to 10 hours there. So that 16 now turns into 6 hours a day.
Wow.
Right? So if you think about that, in the morning you're spending an hour and a half getting ready for the day, and then you're spending an hour and a half at night getting ready for the night. So there's another 3 hours gone. So now you're down to 3 hours a day. And we have to be very vigilant and very decisive with those 3 hours. If we're not, it's going to slip away, and we're going to find ourselves on the cell phone. We're going to find ourselves deep in social media, scrolling through other people's lives and neglecting what matters to us most, which is what you said, is our passions outside of our family and outside of work. And those are what make us be able to be the best version of ourselves when we show up to work and we show up for our family.
3 hours doesn't seem like enough.
It's not, but that's where we're at. And when we spend, I just released a new speaker reel, and there's a section in there where I talk about cell phones and devices, computers, screens in general.
Yeah.
So we spend on average 5.4 hours per day on the phone. If you take out the 8 hours that we sleep every single night, that's more than one-third of our waking hours spent on the phone.
Yeah, yeah.
And when we say that we only have about 3 hours a day of personal time, and when we take out all the logistical time, that means when we're getting our kids ready in the morning, a lot of people are looking at the phone. Mm. And guess who's getting neglected?
Mm-hmm.
The children. Guess who's seeing their parent with their face in the phone?
Mm.
Their children. And then they wonder why the kid wants to watch YouTube all the time, because yeah. that's what they're seeing from their parents.
That's so convicting, because I have to admit, like, I have a problem, but I've justified it. I've justified my time on the screen with research, with me figuring out how other people are doing interviews, and I'm always reading or taking in some kind of learning, and so I've justified it. But just the other day, I said to myself, I have had enough learning through the screen.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm at the point where I'm going to reduce it. There's been days where I go no media.
Right.
And only business. But, you know, I mean, no fun, no just looking and scrolling, because I do tend to get lost sometimes. Now, the comparison game or looking the way other, I'm kind of matured out of that.
Yeah, for sure.
It's more of a business thing, mm-hmm. but that's what justifies it for me. But it's created a whole nother problem, because now it has a purpose. But even that purpose has resulted in the same thing, is that my screen time is too much.
Right.
So I'm telling myself, Sam, you need to cut it down. And I need to bring it back to learning with individuals. And like right now, I have 3 books that I'm reading, hard copies, not digital or audio.
That's
fantastic. Which I consume a lot of those. But I said, okay, I gotta get back to buying a book and reading it. And I'm doing that intentionally, because it's a hard habit, because so much relies on that screen.
It does. And it's hard for the kids to know if we're working, or if you're watching a YouTube video, mm-hmm. or if you're scrolling through social media,
yeah.
all they see is you with your face in the screen.
Yeah.
And for me, it's very valuable that I teach my children to consume education through other means, mm-hmm. Through educational games, through books. You mentioned yeah. something a second ago, through information exchange with your peers.
Yeah.
And that is a huge thing that we're missing, right? We get a lot of information exchange. Now, with that said, I like to think about, when I was a kid, I wanted to be an inspirational speaker. And I'm fortunate to this day to be able to do that. Now, it's not on the level that I want yet, mm-hmm. to make the impact that I want yet, but we're on the way. But everybody, either on LinkedIn or Instagram, is an inspirational speaker now. They've all got something that they want to say, and so if everyone's producing, who's consuming this information? Yeah. Or is anyone actually receiving this, or are we just all putting it out there? See, thought transfer involves a thought production and a thought consumption. Somebody has to consume yeah. that information. If we're just putting it out there and nobody's consuming it, then we're not getting that information exchange that we want.
Yeah.
And that's what my goal is to impact people on a level that really makes sense for them. And the way that I've found to be able to do that is through interpersonal communication outside of social media. Now, it may not be
break,
to the
break
level.
Break it down for me so I can understand.
Yeah, so it's, face-to-face meetings.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
Your Sunday school group at church, or your private group in the evenings that you meet with, your men's group.
Mm-hmm.
Those things are so valuable.
People on social, it's a one-way interaction. You don't need to. You don't have to have a filter. You don't have to watch if you get too loud. You don't have to worry about hijacking a conversation. You just consume. Like, it kind of allows you to, for lack of a better term, but just to be lazy in your connecting with others. And I feel like that's going to end up hurting us. And we see it year after year with the new generations and how they communicate and interact with people. What are some tips that you can give? Because you interact with a lot of people whenever you speak, and then you're doing the training that you do for your business. What do you see helps when you're interacting with people?
The number one thing that I can say would help people to connect with somebody is to have true empathy.
Mm-hmm.
You got to really care about somebody's position, what they're saying, what their intentions are, mm-hmm. what their impact is, and it has to be heartfelt. people can see through fakeness.
Oh, man.
Right? People are so good at understanding generosity or genuineness, mm-hmm. and whether somebody is doing it for likes or whether they're doing it to truly make an impact. And for me, it all starts with empathy. I was talking to a group of students the other day, and they asked me, what's the number? My career is traditionally in occupational safety and health. And as a person who has suffered extreme mental illness in my life, mm-hmm. and to be able to overcome that and to be in a position of success, I like to share some of the success stories that I've had. And the number one thing that has helped me to become a successful teacher, mentor, advisor, galvanizer is empathy. You got to care what people are saying and listen to what they're saying and listen beneath the surface, because not everyone's real good at saying what they really want to say.
Yeah.
So we got to really try to really understand what someone's meaning when they say it. And that means shut your mouth, right? Mm-hmm. God gave us 2 ears and one mouth for a reason. Mm. So when we're engaged with somebody and they need our help or we're trying to give them advice, the best thing we can do is listen.
On social media, the human psyche really likes the likes and the comments. They like the numbers that they receive. It's like their affirmation. It's like, what I'm doing is interesting to others. So it's kind of like we're seeking that on the screen. But what are the likes in real life for you? How are you calculating your impact on a daily basis when there isn't a real button for you?
That's such a great question. You know, oftentimes when I'm training, I don't get to see the results of what comes up from that training. The things that I get out of the training, the feedback from the groups that say, hey, since you were here, things have really improved, or we've got less injuries on the job, or we had a group at Tarrant County. We were doing monthly safety trainings for them, and we did a 3-month series on mental health. Mm-hmm. And the whole synopsis of this was, hey, if you need help, reach out. The stigma is real, okay, about mental health, right? You need to suck it up, drive on, all that stuff. Mm-hmm. But it takes more strength to reach out for help than it does to suffer in silence. So at the end of that training, there were 5 people who reached out to the employee assistance program from Tarrant County and said, I need help. Now that is a way that you can really see real life examples of people who were suffering, who now understand that they need help and they actually seek the help that they need. So that's one example. Another example would be the interactions that I get with people when they come up and say, thank you so much, that really meant a lot to me. And it's not always on mental health. It could be, an occupational health and safety topic as well. But, I fall into that same category too. You know, I put a content out on LinkedIn and then, you find yourself checking it 3 times over the next couple of days. Hey, how many people saw this? How many likes? Yeah. And I think it's human nature to want to be accepted.
Yeah. So I wonder the equation. Okay. So 100 likes. No, people don't even like it. They want 500. They want 2,000. They want to see that little K next to the real nowadays. Like the few doesn't even matter. And then the comments are at least that's one area that's still worth something. It's interacting and connecting with people, but people don't put a lot of emphasis on that. And so when someone says, you spoke and you helped someone, and maybe it did come 2 months later, how does that reinforcement equal to likes? Because to me, that should be worth more, that should last longer, that should motivate you more. But nowadays, we want it, and then it's like, okay, well, where's the next one? Because our mind is on social, our mind isn't on interactions.
Right.
And so how do you feel? How long does that last for you? What motivates you to keep going if those affirmations, those good job, those attaboys aren't showing up? Because we would go crazy if we got 2,000 attaboys after you did a speech or something. You know what I mean? The reality is they come They're very few, but they just mean more.
Right.
So how long do those last? How do you keep them in your forethought to continue to motivate you? So we're not leaning on social or like a digital, you know, support.
You know, it's a really great question. I'm trying to think about when I think about likes versus interactions, you know, likes are great. You know, it makes us feel like people are, you know, engaging with the content, yeah, and they're agreeing with our standpoint, or they can understand our views. But for me, it comes down to intent. Okay, what's your intentions? Mm-hmm. What is the reasons why you're putting the content out? Are you putting the content out because you want to like, or are you putting the content out because you want to impact people's lives?
Yeah.
And for me, it's the latter. I want to impact people's lives. I would much rather, I feel much more engaged if I did a speech and I had one person come up to me and said, hey, you impacted my life. The way that you presented this made me question everything that I'm doing, mm-hmm, for the good.
Yeah.
That's much more powerful than if I posted that same video on LinkedIn or Facebook or, yeah, wherever, and I got 100 likes. Because for me, it's personal. Mm-hmm. I was able to feel that person's emotion. I was able to understand where they were coming from. And remember, I said it all goes back to empathy. And for me, I have a lot of empathy.
Yeah.
I grew up in a house with an alcoholic mother and a dad who died when I was 8 months old, an abusive stepfather. There wasn't a lot of empathy.
Yeah. And I'll clip the previous interview you did. You kind of go into that a little bit more. Yeah. I'll put it in the description.
Yeah, so, I mean, I'm not going to go into it right here. We've already discussed that. But, you know, I grew up in a troubled home.
Yeah.
And so you know, when you think you're going to get beat all the time, you have to learn to read people's emotions to know if they're upset or if they're happy or if you're in trouble, if you're going to get beat. And so along the way, that led me to be able to understand people's emotions.
Yeah.
And I harness that power for the good. Mm-hmm. And for me, I get a lot more charge of my batteries, if you will, when I see somebody had an impactful experience from one of my talks. Much more so than somebody who just hit a like button on the computer.
You know, I think about, because we're recording this in this space, and I'm with Rick, and then behind the scenes, my other friend Ricardo is here. And it's crazy because, I'm going to make y'all laugh, because Ricardo don't be liking none of my stuff, but I'm joking. But it's a great metaphor for what you're saying. Because I appreciate when we hang out and have a cup of coffee and talk. And then, like Rick don't like my stuff. No, I'm joking. Rick likes some of my stuff, but that doesn't, like, I never include that in our relationships that you need to like my stuff, because that's not more important than the conversations that we have and the time that we've spent. That, because that's established, it minimizes the other thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just wanted to put that out there so that if you're watching and there's people in your life, that's more valuable. But you have to kind of separate it. You have to say this is good. Like having coffee, having a conversation.
Let me ask you something. So if you have 20 friends on Facebook who consistently post photos, mm-hmm, right, and it's of their family, so-and-so, one of their sons or daughters had a birthday, and you like the post, right? Or you love it, or you're enthusiastic about it. You may even put a comment on there, happy birthday, so-and-so. Is that the same as giving them a call and saying, hey, let's meet up for coffee. Let's do a check-in. How are you?
Yeah.
I haven't seen you in months.
Yeah.
I think, you know, I want to know your stance on that. Where do you think that liking somebody's post of their kids on Facebook is valuable as going out to a cup of coffee and meeting up with them?
What I'm learning is that my social interactions on, like, social media, those are separate relationships with separate rules. Like, they have less value. The only way that I add real depth value is my real people relationships. Those are on another level. Everything I do, everything I like, the advice that we give back and forth means more. On the other side, on social media, I'm like, I better just like this, like that, so that they know I know they're alive.
Right.
Like, it's very, very, it's not
surface
deep.
Level.
It's not deep at all.
Yeah.
And with some of them people, we have relationships outside of social, and they know it, and that's good enough for me, but it's hard doing, like, the podcast, being someone that needs social media behind me. I do need likes. I am looking for growth.
Yep.
But I'm not trying. I'm just done with it taking my time.
Yeah.
Like, my purpose is gonna have to fuel that. Like, people are gonna have to feel what I'm doing, and that I'm trying to give something to the world, because I look at my daughter and I look at my wife and I'm like, I cannot consume myself digitally. I just can't.
Yep.
Like, it just, I'm gonna die inside if I'm not having, I feel more fulfilled when I'm interacting with my dear friends, you know?
Absolutely. And you will, you know, and I'm not saying that social media is all bad, okay? There's a lot of great content out there. I've even learned a lot through social media. It's just like everything else. It's moderation. It's in balance, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Social media and the internet, it has to be a portion of our life, not the portion of our life. And, you know, we could waste so much time scrolling rather than getting out. And the best way to recharge your batteries is to get in touch with the earth. Mm. Go out and look at, you know, the trees and watch the wind blow through the trees and listen to the birds. Take your shoes off. Walk in the grass, ground. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a lot of science that backs up grounding. Are you familiar with this, grounding?
I am.
You know, for anybody who's not familiar, everything is energy. So if we get in touch with the earth, all that negative energy, the earth absorbs it and takes it out of us and actually helps to recharge our batteries with good energy.
Yeah.
And, you know, this is proven science. And it's just like we were talking about a minute ago with diet. I'm big into methylation studies, which talk about gene mutations in the body and how we methylate means how chemicals or how vitamins and supplements are absorbed in the body. Yeah. And some people have mutations that don't allow you to absorb certain nutrients or supplements, and that can make you more susceptible to anxiety and depression. So for me, mental health, it's not just saying, all right, you need to, you know, make sure that you get out and ground. It's, all right, you need to do some grounding, and you need to make sure your diet's great, and you need to make sure that you're, you know, you do a methylation test to make sure that you don't have any mutations that are making you more susceptible to stress and anxiety.
Yeah.
And the chemicals that we have in the lives of an everyday American now, you know, that we have products in our food that aren't allowed in most every other country in the world, like yellow number 5, red dye, artificial preservatives, folic acid, which is added into every single wheat product that's been bleached, that is a synthetic ingredient which doesn't break down in the majority of Americans' bodies. And when that builds up, it increases depression, anxiety. Look what's happened in the last 50 years.
Yeah.
Anxiety and depression is through the roof.
Yeah.
And so for me, I want to get down to the bottom reason of why people are suffering. Why is the most important question for anything. It brings importance to why you want to do the failed podcast, right? Why I want to be a good father. Why do I want to be healthy? All of those are the most important question of anything.
So as you becoming a speaker, with all the experiences that you've had in your job and training and speaking to people, what are the areas that you're going to focus on as this journey begins? If I invited you to speak to my group of 500, what are your areas of focus? And I'm asking because we're going to zoom in on one or two.
Okay. So right now I'm talking about obviously mental health and burnout, like work-life balance, how to, you know, manage stress and anxiety in the digital age with cell phones. And then, of course, anxiety, depression. As a sufferer of anxiety and depression for a good portion of my life, I want to tell people that it is possible to overcome this. Now, to this day, I still suffer anxiety. I'm not depressed because I've learned how to handle my anxiety through breathing exercises, through meditation, mindfulness, prayer. For me, I'm a spiritual person, so I talk to God on a daily basis. But it's not one thing. Mm-hmm. It's a variety of steps that you take every single day to increase your mental health. So that's a topic that I talk about. Just overall being a good person, what that means.
Yeah.
What does it mean to be a good person anymore? You ask somebody that, you're going to get 25 different answers.
Let's start there then, because it's the simplest questions we almost answer automatically, that we're okay with such a quick answer. We don't think about it anymore. What is a good person? What are you striving for? Like, if someone's watching, a lot of us think we are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think, to me, a good person is you got to make an impact on society, mm-hmm. number one. You got to be good to your family and your friends. It means having empathy and trying to accept people where they are. Mm-hmm. So much has happened to me in the last 5 years. I used to try to fix everybody's problems, but not everybody wants you to fix their problems. Yeah. Sometimes they just want you to listen.
How did you come to that realization? Because there's a lot of people who are, I want to help, or I'm a yes person, and that it's like self-inflicting, and it happens for years because the rewards are big. The rewards are, man, Rick's a nice guy. Rick's always there. It's all these compliments that kind of trick you, and you're ignoring yourself. How did you come to terms with that? Because that's also hard, because you're also going against wanting to help people.
Yep. It all comes down to listening, mm-hmm. okay? I used to be really bad at just not listening and feeling like I knew exactly how I was going to fix this person, and then I would totally blow off what they were saying, and then right when they finished talking, I would go into how I'm going to fix them.
Yeah.
And you'd see, and a lot of this happened in my family, in my immediate family at home. Just listening and just saying, I'm here for you.
Yeah.
And I care is so much more important than trying to fix people's problems. Because a lot of times, they already know how to fix their problems.
Yeah.
They just don't have the strength or the Mickey in their corner, if you will, like Rocky did, telling them to get up and get out there. Sometimes people just need you to tell them, hey, it's okay, you got this, get up, you can do it.
There's this thing that they do for kids. I forgot the exact terminology, but it's basically like, do you want me to listen? Do you want me to help? Or do you want me to, I forgot what it was, but it was three things. And then they would pick. So sometimes we just want a hug. Sometimes we just want, it was that, a hug, venting, and advice.
Yeah.
And you would say, which one, what are you coming to me for?
That's
out of
great.
Those three?
I love
and,
that.
And they were surprised that a lot of kids simply said, I want a hug.
Yeah.
Like, I just, like, I'm not trying to fix it, figure it out, or whatever. But we go in and we think, I'm smart, and so I have advice to give, and that's what, everyone's privileged to hear my advice.
Yeah.
When you hear those three things, what does it trigger? What does it make you think?
It makes me think I screwed it up for a long time. and it makes me very happy that I totally agree with you on that. I was watching a video, oddly enough, on LinkedIn the other day, consuming some materials.
Yeah, don't get me wrong, guys. I still consume.
Don't get me wrong.
I consume
LinkedIn a lot. I'm not going to lie. It's the one that I'm on more than any other social media.
You need a sign that says work in progress.
Yeah. But it said, on average, we need 10 hugs a day. So when you hug,
10 hugs a day.
10 hugs a day. And not a side crappy hug, a real hug. And it was talking about how when we hug, it releases a chemical called oxytocin. And oxytocin is extremely valuable at defeating anxiety and stress. And in this world that we live in the digital age where input is going off constantly, your phone is dinging, you've got your email that's responsible, you know, that you're
those
responsible
ain't hugs.
For. You know, those aren't hugs. Those are stressors, right? Yeah. Your kid's at school, maybe you're in debt, maybe you want to buy that house and you can't, or maybe there's something that you're trying to do and you can't do that, and you have all this stress, okay? And then you add in that cell phone that's always dinging and going off. And you know, and a lot of people are wearing watches nowadays that the watch dings and the watch vibrates. I had to stop wearing the watch just because of that very reason. It was dinging all the time. Yeah. But the hugs, I know this sounds really elementary, but hugs offset the stress. And when we hug somebody, you can feel the emotions being released into your body, the hormones that are being released, these are good hormones that we need to offset the cortisols and all that. You know, for me, when you said most kids just want a hug, and the other night I was laying in bed with Charlie, and she was having a rough night. Charlie's my 9-year-old daughter. My wife has been a little bit under the weather, and so I've been putting Johnny to bed, my 2-year-old son, and then my 9-year-old daughter. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, of course it took an hour to put Johnny to bed. And then by the time I got to Charlie, what do you think I was? I was a little bit tired, right? Yeah. And she said, "Daddy, I just want you to lay here with me. I just want to hug. Mm-hmm. I just want you to hold me." And that's so important. People, hug your children. Please hug your children. Mm-hmm. Tell them they're valuable. Tell them you love them. Tell them they mean the world to you, because that's what they need.
When you speak about mental health is such a big topic. And then you think about your kids, like your mental health is not only important to you, but it pours over into your kids, and you don't even know like how they're taking you or looking at you, the energy that you're giving them. And so the other day I heard an example about people thinking about mental health like when something breaks, you replace it and you move on, as opposed to something that's maintained. You don't go to the gym once and say, "Oh man, that was good, I'm done." The goal is for it to be consistent and lifelong. Mm-hmm. And so it's a term that, you know, hopefully it starts catching some wheels. It's mental fitness over mental health. Mental health seems to have a period on it. Like, just because you identify something doesn't mean you need to maintain it. If you get control of your anxiety, if you leave it alone, it's likely going to come back.
It will come back.
So when it comes to maintaining it, what have you learned, and what advice could you give to someone?
That is a fantastic question, Sam. I remember when I first started my mindfulness journey, there was this app that I would listen to every single day. Mm-hmm. And I found myself getting better. And I was working out. I was going to the gym. I was eating better. And I found myself getting better. And then guess what would happen? I would slack off. I would stop listening to the app. I'd stop going to the gym. And then boom, I found myself anxious and stressed again. And I found myself on this roller coaster ride of emotions. I was up and then I was down and then I was up and then I was down. What you said a minute ago was so powerful about mental fitness. The brain is just like any other muscle, okay? It has to be exercised. It has to be nurtured. If we don't put in a consistent routine, and I mean every single day, regardless of circumstance, you have to do this. So my routine in the morning, I wake up, and the second I get out of bed, I do push-ups. The second I get out of bed, I drop to the floor, and I do push-ups. I started with 10 push-ups, and then I work my way up. I add one every single day. I've been doing this for about 2 months now. And I topped out at 50. So I wake up and I do 50 push-ups. I got it started at 10 and worked my way up to 50. So every morning I'm doing 50 push-ups. And then when I'm in the push-up position, guess what it naturally puts you in? Your knees are on the ground and your face is on the floor. Mm-hmm. And for me, I'm thanking God at that moment for that very day, for the breath in my lungs. Gratitude is the number one killer of anxiety and stress. Mm-hmm. You cannot be grateful and anxious at the same time. It's physically impossible. So when you have gratitude in your heart, you're killing all of that stress for the day, or at least for a little while until you have some big stressor come in. So one of the things that I talk about is stacking. So people will stack stressors on top of each other. So let's say you're on your way to work, you got a flat tire, and then you put the spare on and somebody cuts you off at the exit because you're on a donut and they wanted to get in front of you, and then you get to work and the copier doesn't work, and then nobody put paper in it, and then you have to put paper in it, and then guess what? You just got a call from school, your son threw up, and you had a big meeting that you're gonna miss, and next thing you know, you're anxious. You're stressed. Yeah. So in that moment, we can choose to allow the norepinephrine, allow the cortisol, allow the adrenaline that's flowing through us to take over our decision making, which, you know, just like I do, when we're in that state of mind, we're not level-headed. We're not thinking from the prefrontal cortex. We're thinking from the amygdala, which is the hormonal part of our brain, rather than reasoning and rational thought. So we have to remove ourselves from that physiological state. And the only way we can do that, Sam, is through awareness of what we're going through. You have to be aware when your physiological state shifts. When you get into that stressful state of mind, when you start making poor decisions, it's time to rein it back. It's time to go back into gratitude. It's time to think about your blessings and think about the things that you have that you're grateful for, rather than focusing on the things that we don't have.
Now, as far as gratitude, from day to day, they don't change much. Like most people's lives, it's stuff that takes time, and it's almost going to seem repetitive after you narrow down the things you're grateful for. So what do you do? Because people have a problem with boredom or repetitiveness. They're like, well, what else? What else? How do you fight that? How do you fight? Like, you know, I'm thankful for my family, I'm thankful for my job, and I'm going to say it every day that it almost seems like nothing. How do you keep the value and the worth of those things you're grateful for high, even though they don't change often? Because I feel they're like, they're roots. Like things that you're grateful for, they're rooted deeply.
I think some people need to open their mind as to what they could be grateful for.
Yeah.
You could be grateful for somebody who opened the door for you. Mm-hmm. You could be grateful for having air in your tires when you went out to the vehicle. You could be grateful for the shoes that are on your feet.
No matter how silly or small that it seems, it's doing something chemically
in the brain, right? Mm-hmm. It's removing stress. It's pumping you full of endorphins and dopamine, which is what's going to make you feel good.
Yeah.
In addition to the gratitude, I cannot stress to everybody enough to go get a methylation DNA test. There's thousands of companies out there that do it, and you'll be able to identify where your supplemental deficiencies are and your vitamin deficiencies, so you can supplement those. For instance, I just went through a huge methylation test, and I have a gene mutation in my MTHFR gene, or MTFHR.
Can't help you there.
Yeah, so what it means is, and this is going to shock you, so what it means is that my body does not process homocysteine on a very good scale, okay? It builds up in my body, and you want to know what the number one causes of that are? High blood pressure, which I had being the key word, vision problems, hello, I'm wearing glasses,
okay,
and stress and anxiety. I suffered from all of those. Since I started this supplement program about 45 days ago, all of this is improving. I'm taking less blood pressure medication than I ever have.
Yeah.
I'm almost completely off my blood pressure medication. I'm able to drink coffee again.
Yeah.
I'm able to not be as stressed. And this is something that the mainstream media is not talking about. A lot of people are talking about mental health, but when you get down to it, what does that really mean?
Yeah.
Where are the symptoms coming from? What is causing you to have all of these problems?
Yeah, it's like seeing an auto shop, but not worried about the mechanic that's going to work on. Like,
exactly.
The mechanics of it. I was looking into something like the way that people take vitamins or caffeine, or there's certain things that people are taking, and they give you these doses, and there's limits on the dose. They're like, up to this many milligrams, it's effective. After that, sometimes it's negative, sometimes it's no effects, but it's the lack of understanding that you will go too much on something or too little and not get the full effect. So that brings me to the point of understanding and learning. How do you bring yourself, because all this stuff sounds good, and who doesn't want to get a test?
Methylation test.
But it's so hard to learn these things. There's so much information. How do you bring yourself to discover these new things? How does that not add anxiety to you? Because if I jump into something else to get better, it comes with so much information.
Yeah, lots of information.
And information creates stress for people because they don't know how to process it or execute on it. What do you do so that that doesn't create anxiety or a sense of desperation?
I think you're going to have anxiety your whole life. It's never going to completely go away. What we have to do is learn to manage that anxiety. And it's anxiety has such a negative connotation to it.
It's like fear. If you look at it like fear, it makes sense. You're to stay alive, you need it.
Anxiety is a healthy thing.
Yeah.
Okay? What is not healthy is too much anxiety. Back in the caveman days, anxiety was great because it made you realize, hey, there's a lion over there. I'm going to get eaten. If I stay by the lion, I probably need to get the heck out of here.
Yeah.
Right? So now that, you know, we're not getting chased by lions anymore, now the lion has become, I got to pay my bills.
Yeah.
I got to pay my mortgage. I got to put my kid in new shoes, or how am I going to put food on the table? So balancing all of that is extremely important. So when it comes to new information, I try to digest small bites at a time.
Mm-hmm.
I don't go in and dive in completely and immerse my whole self. So I try to learn little bits of information and then find somebody that you want to model. And I mean somebody who's a healthy model, not somebody who's, you know, an Instagram model and is just doing it for the likes. Yeah. Find somebody, when I say model, like you want to model their behavior, you want to model their science, you want to understand what they're doing.
Yeah.
For me, it's Dr. Stephen Reiner in Southlake at Reiner Holistic. He has opened my mind to so much, and he's the one that actually encouraged me to get this methylation test done and to understand. You know, I was going to a doctor for 10 years. I've been taking blood pressure medicine. Not once did they ever mention that I might have a gene mutation that doesn't let me process homocysteine.
Yeah.
And now that I understand this, I went from literally one blood pressure pill a day to now I'm only on half a day, and I could probably even get rid of that pretty soon.
Yeah.
And it's real results. So find something that you're passionate about that you feel like can make a difference in your life. And when you see the results, it's going to empower you rather than to restrain you.
So I have a few questions that just, and they have to do with daily wins so that you can somewhat be healthier mentally and all that. You said you do, you know, you push-ups as soon as you wake up, and that might be your answer, but I'm just curious, what other physical wins do you try to hit daily so that you can continue to, you know, just to be better?
So, like I said earlier, I try to hug my kids all the time. So that is a physical win for me. So I like to ride my bike. And it's a variety of exercise. It could be, like last night, Johnny and I, we rode around the neighborhood on his bike for about 30 minutes. And that 30-minute stimulation after dinner, it stimulated my metabolism so that I don't go to bed with a huge stomach of food. And then it also helps to stimulate those positive endorphins and dopamine in your body, because just 15 minutes of a brisk walk can increase all of those dopamine and endorphins in the body. So staying active. The body in motion tends to stay in motion, and a body at rest tends to stay at rest. I'm dealing with this with a family member right now, you know, going through mental illness, right, depression. And how do you get a person in depression to understand that they need to move to come out of the depression when the last thing they want to do is move? when you're in a deep depression, the last thing you want to do is go to the gym or go for a walk or even be out in the sunshine. But it's the thing that you need the most.
Yeah, start there.
So how do you, you know, get somebody to understand, hey, if you go out and you get out in the sun and go for a walk, you're going to feel better. Vitamin D, which the sun puts in our body, is a known mood enhancer. Mm. It's a natural mood enhancer. Think about how many people spend time inside now versus outside.
Oh, man. Yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah. And get outside, people.
Get outside. Go enjoy life. You know, go and enjoy life the way God intended it to be, outside in nature and experiencing interpersonal communication.
On a daily basis, mentally, what are some wins that you're trying to have?
I'm trying to minimize serious anxiety attacks. So because of what happened to me when I was young, anxiety and stress are baked into my bread, if you will. If everybody is a loaf of bread, all of your ingredients that are added in to make that loaf of bread are added in before the age of 12. And your bread is baked about the age of 12. So once your bread is baked, you are who you are. Yeah. And you've got to learn to manage that. And for me, it's minimizing anxiety attacks, which I do a pretty good job of. The other thing is I want to make sure that I'm having an impact on a daily basis, whether it's with my family, with my career, with my friends, with my, you know, my business, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. So I have to feel like I'm making an impact on a daily basis. And I just try to smile. I just try to look at the good, find the goodness in people. Life is about focus. So the way the brain works is what we focus on is what we see, right? So if you're focusing on, let's say you and your spouse are fighting a lot, and you're saying, oh, you know, all they do is yell or all they do is scream, then probably that's what you're focusing on. If you want to see the good in somebody, you can find the good in them.
Yeah.
And so we have to focus on the good things, and we're going to get more of them.
Yeah.
But if we focus on the bad things, the things that we don't like or the stressors or the anxiety initiators, that's what we're going to find. It's more of that.
I have a funny thing that's happened to me. It has to do with anxiety. So there's like smaller grocery stores where we know where everything is and we can make a list and we're in and out.
Yep.
And I mean, it's still the same amount of stuff, right? But I don't feel anxiety. And then I go to Target and I don't even know if it's real or not, but I feel anxiety when I go there. And I realized this the other day. You know what I mean? Which is just crazy. Environmental, like, stressors are real.
Mm-hmm.
And I just thought that was funny. I just wanted to share it with you. So
go to a Super Target and go to a Super Walmart. I mean, you can get anything you want. So you're starting to think, oh, what could I use here? What could I do with this? What could I do with that? And, you know, if you're anything like me and you're an impulsive buyer, you've got half the carts full with crap you don't even need. So it's wonder that, you know, we're all anxious and when we go into those places.
What do you do on a daily basis to have spiritual wins?
Every morning I do my quiet time with the Lord for me. You know, you don't have to be a faith follower to have a spiritual win.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's pretty common knowledge that there is something greater than ourselves. You can call it the greater collective energy. You can call it a higher power. You can call it God. For me, I call it God. I call, you know, my higher power God. And so I spend quiet time with God in the morning. And then in the evening times before I go to bed, I read the Bible and I try to learn something different than I maybe already know, or to think about things from a different perspective. Having an open mind is extremely important. Mm-hmm. If we're closing ourselves off and to an idea, that maybe could benefit us or maybe could help us to have more understanding, then we're not going to have an open dialogue with people like what we're doing right here. So keeping an open mind is a spiritual win for me. And to truly understand, God, how beautiful this world is.
Yeah.
It is. We are so lucky. We have won the cosmic lottery, people. We're floating on a ball in the middle of space and the only planet that we know that has life on it.
Yeah.
I mean, think about that.
Pretty amazing.
That's pretty freaking amazing. We have a chance to do something. And so many people spend their times bogged down with crap that doesn't even matter.
Yeah.
It's so sad. And that's why I'm on a mission to change that.
Well, I can't wait to see the impact that you're going to make. I'm so excited for this journey that you're on. And for, you know, you allow me to kind of ask you questions and see where you're at and see what you've learned. And so I've enjoyed that. Being the Failed Podcast, obviously, I just want you to finish with a thought on the word failure.
Failure is a gift. I was explaining this to my daughter the other day. Such a great story. She started off the softball season 0-6. She had 6 plate appearances, and all 6 of them she struck out, or she got out, or she didn't hit the ball. And she got so, so upset. The girls aren't going to like me. I'm not contributing to the team. I'm a failure. And I started thinking about that, and I told her, I said, honey, failure is one of life's greatest gifts, if we let it be, because it teaches us what we're doing wrong, where we need to improve, and how we can do that. And so she really, really focused, and she went to the batting cages. And she's at that age where it's the first year that girls pitch to the batter.
Yeah.
The pitches are all erratic. They're not all in the strike zone. Girls are getting hit with the ball. There's a lot of fear. There's a lot of anxiety. And failure is a big part of that.
Mm-hmm.
But here's the thing. If you are a Major League Baseball player and you hit 300, which means you're only hitting 30% of the balls,
yeah,
you're failing 70% of the time. But if you hit 300 in the major leagues, you're a Hall of Famer.
Yeah.
Failure is a part of life. So let me tell you, this last game, she stepped up to that plate, and she had the only hit off of a girl in that whole game, and it went all the way to the outfield, and she scored 2 runs.
Yeah.
And she had success, and she saw that smile. I saw that smile on her face, and I pushed her because we went to the batting cages, and I pushed her, and I pushed her, and I said, the only way you're going to overcome failure is through repetition. You got to have lots of failure, lots of failure. You overcome the failure through failure. And wouldn't you know, she had that hit, and that smile on her face brought so much joy to me. I've never had a sports moment like that, even playing college sports for myself, as seeing my daughter overcome something through failure and then be able to have success.
Yeah,
I've failed so many times, but failure only is finite when we give up.
Yeah.
So don't give up. Don't be afraid to fail. Put yourself out there. Learn from your failure and figure out how to be better next time.
Boom. That's how it is. Rick, I just want to say thank you for coming on.
Thank you.
I hope you enjoyed that conversation. I think there was a lot of wisdom, a lot of nuggets in your story. And thank you again for coming on. Really enjoyed this time.
Thank you so much. I'm excited to see. This room is amazing. You have come so far from that little bitty studio, and now you're in a big studio with professional lights and camera and a cameraman behind the scenes.
We're getting there. We're getting there.
You know. Thanks to Ricardo for doing all the hard work behind the scenes, and thank you for your genuine efforts in trying to make the world a better place.
Thank you, Rick. Guys, thank you all so much for tuning into this episode here at the Failed Podcast. I hope that you enjoyed it. I hope you laughed. I hope you learned, and I hope it causes you to shift the way that you think and maybe the way that you behave. But I will take this away for me, and obviously, I hope you take this away for you. It's as simple as just be grateful and get a hug. That's it. Like, start there, like, and then work on everything else as it comes. And, you know, because none of this is easy. But get a hug and be grateful. That's what I'm going to leave this up.
Should we hug?
Yeah, we should hug. We'll hug.
We'll hug.
From a distance. Let's see.
It doesn't work the same.
Yeah, I know. No, but it's nothing but love, man. Like, I get good energy from you, Rick. And I really do appreciate your friendship and our family's friendship as well. And so I think that I'm grateful for that. And so thank y'all so much, and we'll see y'all on the next one.